So I just put the agenda up. It's pretty short and to the point today. Just talking about the transition from milestone one to milestone two. So Steve had some thoughts on what specifically we could do today. Steve?
Yeah, I mean, what would be good is to review where we've got to on milestone one. In terms of the process we talked about, anything that's open and not yet being worked upon, remove that from milestone one, put that back into the pot. So essentially we'd close off milestone one. I mean, stuff that's in progress, we'd just leave open, I guess, or possibly move into milestone two as open. Then I guess look at the newly submitted issues, see if there's anything new that we need to consider and include in the release as a whole. Then I guess look at the priorities we've got so far, including any new voting priorities, and essentially come up with a candidate list of items for milestone two, based on those priorities. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, I'm just wondering about things, if things are in progress. I mean, if we're sort of, as of today, I guess we're officially out of milestone one. I guess it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. But do we just want to move anything that's not complete? Or you're saying not? If it's in progress, keep it marked as milestone one, just because we don't want to have to do the extra work of putting it in milestone two, or
I'm not bothered with retagging it as milestone two. It might be easier to track all work in progress in one place and therefore put it in milestone two.
Okay.
I'm kind of open, really. I'm not really.
Yeah.
But anything that's not yet been worked upon, I would say goes back into the pot rather than automatically goes back into milestone two. Because we should, I would say, assess the overall priorities, because those might have changed unless anyone's got any. I mean, chances are they're high priority, they'd go anyway.
Oh, that makes sense. So it's sort of a prioritization thing. So if it's not in progress, we move them out of the M1 bucket.
Yeah.
And then reassess priorities.
Yeah, if that sounds sensible, yeah. But to start off with, it's probably worth reviewing if we've got any open questions on issues that we are working with. I ask that because I specifically have on a couple that I looked at. But to start off with, has anybody got anything else in terms of issues currently that they're looking at that they want to open for discussion?
I've got a quick one, or I hope a quick one, on 654, is the REST API methods for RHELs.
Oh, okay.
No one's assigned to this, but Steve, you've been sort of adding comments and stuff, but is that to suggest at all that you're interested in taking this one on, or...
I was interested in taking this one on. I've just added a comment just now because I've got a kind of task down to me to kind of define what this might look like from an interface point of view. What were your thoughts, Eddie?
Well, it's more that I was just wrapping up some work for another client, and it was one of those things where I really wish that this was there.
Okay.
So I ended up having to do some other stuff to work around, and I was already basically playing in this arena, so I was like, I could just as well implement at least, the pieces of it that I know that I need, and even though it's really too late for this other work I'm doing, but at least since my head was already in that space, I was thinking I could just do something. But on the other hand, you've added a lot of considerations that I didn't think of. I mean, I was thinking of this all along the way as just doing parity with the SOAP API. But I don't know how much of this we need to bite off? I mean, are we okay with... Because I think most of what I'm reading, I did see your comment, at least from today. I don't know if it's... You just did a newer one than today. But, you know, are we after doing... How do I say this? How much of this do we want? Do we need to do?
I mean, where I was coming from is that we should at least replicate functionality that's available in the three SOAP API methods. So I think that's uncontentious. In terms of REST implementation, we need to think about resource URIs. So I was proposing just using the objects, PIDs, relationships as addressing the collection of relationships as a whole. Then I got down to thinking, what does that actually mean in terms of REST HTTP verbs, in terms of how we'd implement the sort of the add, get, delete stuff? Get seems fairly straightforward. You either just return all relationships or optionally provide some query parameters to filter that list, as we do with the SOAP API. Although the open question I got there is that actually a restful thing to do, to add query parameters? And we do it for things like expressing format and stuff on other calls. But it's kind of a bit of a crossover, because you're kind of introducing identity into the query parameters. But
yeah, I mean, I see the note you have of sort of potentially individual relationships could be identified. Because, I mean, there's something about that I could see being more intuitively restful. Like, if I want to get all the relationships coming off of a particular, I don't think it would be, you have Fedora objects, PID relationships, and, you know, and then subject, predicate, object, but you probably wouldn't, subject's implied, right? Since you have the PID. But
not really, because we've got data stream relationships as well, and technically data stream properties.
Oh,
Okay. Well, but anyway, I could see how, you know, you'd want to put like the put in URIs for subject, predicate, or object, but. I mean, I take the point of the encoding making it ugly, but nevertheless, that seems like I would kind of expect things to work like that, right? I mean, like I would expect that if I did a get and stuck in a subject and predicate, I'd get everything that matches. But
yeah, that makes sense. So if it's not specified, it's unbound.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense for gets. Yeah.
I don't see it as being, I mean, I think if there were a way to make it elegantly work in sort of a restful way where the resources are relationships, but that would be nice. But I don't see having arguments, you know, especially optional arguments as being really, you know, unrest-like. I guess it's just a question of what you want to consider a resource.
And well, this is a question because, I mean, if you're talking about a triple store and you want to identify a set of triples, I mean, the way to do that is actually to have a named graph with a distinct identifier, which has nothing to do with the triples themselves. So are we creating identifiers that in a wider context actually don't make sense by having them as path parameters? Whereas having them as, you know, URL query parameters, because that's not part of the path, it's not an identifier, so therefore it's not a problem, is my question on that.
Yeah, I guess I would, my assumption would be like if it was at, you know, / relationships, then that would be, you know, in REST speak, that would be your resource.
Yeah.
And the resource is, you know, fundamentally the collection of triples, basically it is a graph, but you know, that says nothing about really the Fedora model. It's just in REST speak, that's a graph. And
which is fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
But what about having, if you want to specify subject and predicate, for example, what would be your views on having those as additional path parameters rather than
query. Patch versus query. Yeah. I guess.
No, I think we could implement either, and I mean, just put it out there. I mean, because we don't have anything, you know, on the REST API side, and it's sort of like something would be great. And if it turns out like by putting it out there, I mean, I think then we get some real input as far as like, oh, well, it would really be, you know, given these use cases, it'd be a lot better if it was, you know, one way versus the other, or it'd be great if you could just really just support both. Because for me, I'm kind of agnostic about, you know, as long as there's some RESTful way of doing it, you know,
okay.
I don't care what my client does.
As an approach, I would agree, absolutely, is to get it out there and see what people think. The only thing that concerns me is that through REST, you're kind of introducing URI identifiers for things. And so if we introduce the path parameter way of doing that, I've just got a kind of an uneasy feeling that we're sort of minting an identifier for a relationship itself, which may not be a valid thing to do. I don't know. I'm completely comfortable with query parameters, but I'm...
Yeah. Well, I'm not even clear how you would make them path parameters exactly, because unless you came up with a special identifier that meant unbound and it was all positional.
Or
right?
You could...
So if subject was unbound, but you wanted to search for anything with, you know, the RDF type predicate or whatever.
Yeah,
what
I mean,
would that look like?
I think in the SOAP API, we allow either subject or subject and predicate to be specified. So from a path point of view, that's okay, because that kind of fits within the hierarchy. You just simply wouldn't provide anything. So if you like, just specifying subject would actually specify a collection of relationships with that subject. Specifying subject slash predicate would specify a collection of relationships that had that subject and predicate, if you like.
But what about the case where you don't specify a subject, but you do specify a predicate?
Okay, we don't actually do that in SOAP at the moment.
Oh, we don't.
But that doesn't mean that it's not a valid thing to do, or even a valid thing to extend with SOAP as well.
So I think I take from that, I feel like if there's any question at all about how this should be done with via the path stuff, then like, screw it for now. We support query params, and then we leave that open for further discussion. Because I mean, in the end, like, it's just a, you know, it's not. I don't think it's going to be technically that hard to do some way.
Yeah, great.
The path param way of doing it is just, you know, getting agreement on it, which is more the troublesome part. So I mean, if it's easier to do via query params, let's just deal with query params.
I'm happy with that.
I'm fine with that. Seems
the one thing is, I mean, so here, like, I haven't really paid all that much attention to how this works now on the SOAP side anymore, like in a couple iterations. But when you do get relationships right now, do you get the DC stuff? Or no? It doesn't, right? It's just rels X and rels in.
No, that's a good question.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure myself. Let me just have a quick...
It is RailsX.
I'm pretty sure that's the case. But so here in the comments, Steve, you were talking about, you know, like having the... I think...
Yeah, you're right, yes.
Having that stuff come back. And if it all comes back, then does that... You know, like, I don't think we want to support, like, someone being able to do deletion of DC, or I don't think we've ever talked about supporting, you know, deleting DC via.
It's something that has cropped up on the list, but it was kind of, we talked around all kinds of things for that we might support a generic, you know, writable method that would take a data stream as a parameter, and you could, you know, post an update to, you know, an arbitrary data stream, including DC, for example, as a way of flexibly implementing that rather than it being directly kind of RESTful. So maybe we do actually want to limit this just to RailsX and RailsInt at this stage. I think I agree with you there.
Okay.
So yeah, my comment's wrong, and I'll amend that, yeah. So, I mean, forget that sounds seems to make sense. question of adding and updating, though. I mean, there's a number of different ways, sort of technically, you could implement this sort of thing. I mean, put seems to imply that you replace the whole resource at the URI, so we probably wouldn't want to do that on
right.
the URI ending relationships, but we'd want to use post instead. But then, you know, you could have some sort of, well, yeah, no, I think that's the case. So it's supposed to seem to make sense for me from that point of view. And then I thought, you know, you could either just post an RDF XML document for additions, or you could use a cut-down version of Sparkle Update for additions and deletions. I don't know whether you've got any thoughts, Eddie, on sort of syntactically what an interface would look like for additions and deletions.
Well, I think, I mean, because I, you know, the way, I mean, the times I've used the SOAP API for updates, I mean, it's that I don't want to construct RDF XML on the client side, right? I just know I want to add an, you know, a relationship, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't necessarily, I mean, because if I'm going to post RDF XML, I'll just post, you know, I'll just do a, you know, modify data stream on RailsX or RailsIn. I wouldn't need this. RESTful relationships API.
Yeah.
What I really want is to be able to say, like, just add a particular relation. And so I guess, you know, it's more that I'm leaning towards more the Sparkle updatey side, but I don't know if we actually want to try to do some Sparkle update bastardization. I mean, maybe we just want to support, So it's basically the same, like if I do the same, if my request is basically, you know, relationships PID or PID relationships and whatever query params for subjects and predicates, and I just do a post, I guess I would expect that to be, I would expect that to add that, you know, the subject predicate object that I've specified in my query params.
Okay, and what similarly for deletes then?
Yeah, and so obviously here, you know, yeah, and obviously for post and delete, then you know, there's no wildcards or splats or whatever that you can support, right? Well, no, that's not true. For delete, you certainly could.
You could, but we don't at the moment. In SOAP.
Yeah, you have to explicitly do each triple, right, when you do deletes in the SOAP API.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, it comes down to what's the identifier, what's the resource URI, and do the query parameters count as part of that URI? Because delete would seem to imply delete the entire relationships collection, if that's the resource URI. And that's where having the subject predicate object encoded as path parameters, so identifying individual resources, then starts to make sense, because then actually put would make sense for create relationship. And delete would make sense for delete an identified relationship with the, you know, the full URL, including the path parameters, is the resource. So maybe that is the right way to go.
Yeah, actually, I think that's right. That does sound right. So, so I think the only thing I'm not, so if we go back to looking at the path param suggestion, the only piece I'm not sure on that is the object type. Does that look right to add the object type as a path param?
No.
Like maybe that.
Well,
maybe that
actually, there is
a query param. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's true. In terms of identity, well, the problem is if you encode a URI in a path parameter, that URI could be interpreted as just a string or as a URI, and you need some way of specifying that. I mean, we could use something like, is it the kind of two carats notation to specify the RDF type? I can't remember the exact syntax, but...
Yeah, the double caret, though, right?
Yeah, so that could be used to specify the type, including the literal type, whether it's a number or a or text or whatever. But there we are creating, you know, a pure URI form, whether it's literal or a URI. So I'm not sure. I mean, to proceed on this, if you want to add comments to the ones that are there, Eddie, do we want to open this up on the list maybe for a bit more discussion, do you think, in terms of what other people might like to see? Although that conflicts with just getting it out there.
Yeah, because the thing is, I mean, I could spend a couple hours doing this, but like, I don't think I have time. I don't think I have like a day to do on this. That's the thing. So that's more my constraint on. I mean, like, I'm happy to just like work on this to get something in there, but
it sounds like doing something reasonable, putting it out as experimental for right now to fill the gap, is a practical thing to do.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Dan.
Well, I've been here. I just didn't have anything to say.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, what if I just do a straw man? I mean, I mean, I can, and then at least we can have some discussion if anything looks terribly wrong.
Yeah, so take a shot, and yeah, that makes sense. I think I personally I'm not too worked up about this one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, if the functionality was there, that'd be great.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, you know, I guess, you know, there's a chance it could offend some people's REST sensibilities, but
well, this is
just looking for functionality.
Yeah, you know, what's the identified resource and what's the operation compared with the actual verbs we're using? I'm sure Asker would have some useful input on this as well, actually.
Yeah.
But I mean, certainly a straw man would be an excellent idea to start with.
All right, I'm gonna just take that as the action item on this. I'm gonna spend a couple hours and put together a straw man, or at least meters to look at, and I mean, we can even put that up on the list. So that, I think the caveat I would say if we put it on the list is okay, but then like if you have comments and discussion that are going to get really involved, like give us some code too then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you don't offend people about the restfulness at least once in every release, you really don't get to collect very many interesting flames.
That's true. Well, you haven't done something right, you know, if you haven't offended at least one person.
Okay.
Okay. So I didn't think this was going to spiral out to so long, but okay.
Okay. Anything else that anyone wants on kind of current issues? I've got a couple to add. Okay, the ones I got are FC Repo 224. Let me just pop that in. Actually, no, let's start with FC Repo 627, in fact, because they're both kind of related.
What was that, 621?
627. So this is, hold on. Yeah, both of these issues were kind of about URI encoding of PIDs. And this particular issue, I mean, I'd actually like to close it off based on what I put in there already. But I mean, basically what was being reported here is if you actually go to the search interface and you start clicking on objects and you see the data stream views and the disseminator views, the actual style sheets producing the HTML were incorrect in that they were not URI encoding the PIDs, whereas the new REST interface actually requires the PIDs to be URI encoded. Specifically, that means if you've got octet encoding in your PID, then the percent character itself has to be encoded.
Okay.
That actually differs from the old Lite APIs in which the encoding was neither required nor accepted. So there's a kind of a general point there that we've got a change between the two REST APIs.
Yeah.
With PIDs being structured the way they are, with them sort of handling encoding natively, I'm not sure what the overall take on requiring encoding of PIDs is and whether we actually need to revamp the whole new REST API and say PIDs don't get encoded, and whether that has actually an impact on the REST framework we're using, in fact, for the new REST API, because it's kind of unconventional to do that. And specifically, I mean, the other issue, which was the 224 one, which is related, I'll just post a link for that. In this case, it was somebody who was generating URLs using sort of standard URL encoding stuff. So that, in this case, colons, but it would happen for escaped octets as well, they were getting encoded, and he was using the old style REST API, which means it wasn't working. So it's a similar sort of issue. My gut feel is to leave the old Lite API as it is and say that PIDs don't get encoded, because that's the way it's always been. And for the new REST API, say... PIDs do get encoded because that's standard URL encoding practice, and leave that as it is. But I don't know, because I'm not sure what the design intention of having encoding built into PIDs in the first place was. So, what do people think?
Yeah. Well, maybe for a little background, it's just in terms of the PID encoding issues. The info, I think when we came up with the rules around PIDs having certain parts encoded or not, it was based on URN syntax.
Yeah.
And we basically did, you have a prefix, a colon, and then a suffix, and you only have one colon in that whole string.
Yeah.
So if some of these... like the NSDL in this example is using kind of a way of translating handles into PIDs.
Sure.
So for the slash, which is required in a handle, in order to meet what we originally set out in terms of what a PID can validly contain, they have to encode it because the percent's allowed, but a literal colon there isn't.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the nuance you mentioned about the old REST API and the new one being slightly different in the way they handle that, is good. I hadn't picked up on that, but I think that explains some of the confusion here.
Yeah.
I like the idea of keeping the old stuff as is, because we shouldn't spend much time on it. The new stuff, I would like to do whatever is most web-like within our constraints. I mean, given the fact that a PID is what it is, I mean, I think it would be very hard for us to change what valid characters in a PID can and can't be. So given the fact that we can't do that, what is it, what's the the right way on a URL for a PID to occur.
I mean, one thing worth mentioning is that this tends to be corner cases. If you're just using a PID namespace colon alphanumerics, this doesn't in fact crop up as an issue because you don't have to URL encode a colon. Although some software does, and the new REST API will decode it if it is encoded. So it's really only an issue where we hit the octet encoded characters is one thing that is worth mentioning. And the fundamental question there is, you know, does the percent get encoded?
Yeah. Let's see. And it seems like if the percent is a literal part of the PID, in other words, if the definition of PIDs don't recognize the percent as special,
yeah,
then it would seem like encoding it is the right thing to do when it occurs on a URL.
Yeah, and certainly in the code at the moment, I mean, that was a post the developers list I made, that seems to be the interpretation made in code of the PID. For example, you know, the octet is treated as three characters, and there's no attempt at normalization. I mean, for instance, percent 58, I think, would be capital X. There's no, if you had namespace colon X and no namespace colon percent 58, those would be, you know, distinct, whereas in URI land, they should be treated as semantically equivalent. So, carry on.
So, Steve, what was your suggestion that we do?
I would say being web-ish would be treat the PID as an opaque string of characters, treat it as data, and therefore encode it.
Right.
It's also the way the REST API is working at the moment, and no one has raised any issues with that.
So encode it whenever it occurs, even if it's part of a URL path, for example. Except if the so if I were writing software to call the REST API and I just had an opaque PID in front of me and I needed to construct a URL, would it be for me, would it just be as simple as running a URL encode?
Yes.
On that PID? Okay. So the colon character, I guess the behavior, I'm not sure what it is now, but if it does occur, it's no problem if it occurs literally. And it
Correct.
Can also occur in encoded form.
Correct. I mean, in terms of strict URI syntax, it doesn't need encoding because in the context of path separators, you know, it has no meaning.
Okay.
So it doesn't require, but most URL encoders are more based on encoding query parameters, so they do tend to encode it.
Yeah.
So either is acceptable, although that does have a knock-on issue in terms of exposing Fedora resources with HTTP URIs, because you've then got two potential different forms of those URIs, which, depending on the consumer of that software, they may or may not treat them as distinct.
So, yeah, and it seems like the right thing to do there is to define which one is the normalized form.
Yeah, and my gut feel would be don't encode colon because it shouldn't be encoded.
Right. I mean, its natural form is not encoded. It's only encoded as a result of putting it over, you know, plugging it into a
URL encoder. Yeah.
URL. Yeah. So,
and it's consistent with the URI form as well. The Info Fedora URI form is consistent with that. There is actually a further knock-on issue, maybe there isn't. So, I mean, in terms of those two issues then, 224 is stating that in the old REST API, colon decoding doesn't happen. Which I think the response to that is, could they use the new REST API instead?
Yeah.
or turn off the decoding and just close that.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. I'm almost positive Ross isn't doing anything Fedora related these days, so I don't think he'll be too upset about that. But I mean, for anybody who runs across it, you know, that would be seems like a pretty fair thing to tell them to use the new way of doing things.
Okay. Anyone else got any objections to that? Okay. And the other one, which is the 627 one, I say this was more related to the HTML views we produce, and that's not correctly encoding PIDs for the new REST API. And I've essentially fixed all of those views. I've listed the changes that I've made. So I've been through all of those views, and then, in fact, I found an XML output where the encoding wasn't happening correctly as well. And I also put some documentation notes in to explicitly state that encoding doesn't happen in the old REST API, it does on the new REST API. So on the basis of that, would we be happy to close that issue as well? 627.
Yeah, so it's the fix is consistent, or the behavior now is consistent with what we just talked about. You mentioned that the style sheets in the last comment of 67, that the style sheets are shared. I'm trying to see.
Yeah, essentially what we've done is if you use the old, for instance, search interface,
yeah.
The identifiers returned in that HTML actually point to the new REST API. So they're only shared in that sense.
Okay.
So, you know, should you use an old REST API call and it gives you an HTML view, anything you click on will take the new REST API.
Okay.
Which is kind of a good deprecation path anyway. So I think that's okay.
Okay. I thought you were pointing out that made trouble for this, but we can still share the style sheet.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
By just redirecting everything to the new API is what happens. So.
Makes sense. So the recommendation, well, for Tim, in the original reporter on this one, really, you know, as far as he's concerned, it's pretty much a client issue for the object viewer.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've now tested it with sort of encoded percent characters and stuff, so you know, the view that he's using there and the PID that he's using there will now work.
Yep.
Okay, so happy with that as an action.
Okay.
Okay. So, so the next one is there anything, well, status of milestone one, let me just post that. Okay, it'll probably take a few seconds to come up. And you'll have to use the embedded scroll bar to see the whole list. I might try and change the overall size. I just wanted to check if we've captured everything on that list that should be in milestone one, whether there's anything that people have fixed outside of that that we should, you know, we just hadn't tagged as milestone one.
Not that I know of. I mean, we certainly fixed a few things before we came up with the milestones. But those are already marked as closed, but they're just not assigned to a milestone.
Okay. Okay, so, I mean, on that basis, what I should do is remove the milestone tagging from this, and we should look at overall priorities. I won't remove the tagging just now. I'll take it a while.
Yeah, and I can actually probably do that in the background while you're listing. You can get the full list of 3.4 stuff and list it by priority still.
Yeah, let me just post that Oh, actually, we should first look at any new issues and see if there's anything we want to add, shouldn't we?
Oh, yeah.
So,
where's our link for that? It's in last week's minute. Newly submitted issues.
Yeah, no, I've got that.
Okay.
Okay. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch on those that we've sort of talked about before and done nothing about, so we probably just want to look at the very most recent ones, don't we?
Yeah, for the time being. Sounds good.
So, yeah, so we've got 699.
Yeah, so that seems like a bug, definitely, right?
Yeah, I've already put that down as major because that's a bug. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, let's see. Versionable equals false. So put sets versionable to true. Oh, maybe this is a different one. The report says that versionable equals false. Yeah, but if you don't specify it, I was reading this wrong. That's consistent with the behavior that we have had, right? Where if you don't specify versionable, like if you're ingesting an object and versionable is unspecified within the XML, I think it defaults to true.
Okay.
There as well. Now, you know, so clearly, well, I'm pretty sure that's the case. I can probably verify pretty quickly.
So the question is just whether not specifying versionable should mean don't change it from what it is or set a default value of true. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We had the same issue with object state, which is listed there as CFC repo 608, where if you don't specify the state, it was defaulting to active, and that was recognized as a bug. So that the REST API call was changed so that it didn't change existing state unless you specified the state.
Oh, this is to modify something,
yeah.
Not to create it.
Yes.
Okay.
These are all modifiers, yeah.
Gotcha. Then that's, yeah. Then, yeah, this is wrong then. Upon creation, though, things, I think, do default to active and versionable is true. It's just, yeah.
Which makes sense, yeah. Okay, so I'll go ahead and open that one.
Yeah.
Okay, and I guess that's... I'll put that as a fixed version for Fedora 3.4 as well, then. Okay. Next one there is FC repo 698, which is saying the info Fedora registration contains outdated information. I'd say that's, I personally, a fairly low priority, but could be a background thing if someone wanted to.
Yeah.
Namespace information.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I'd open that and... what is the, let's see, we've got the URI needs to be updated. Do we have, oh, well.
The URI needs to be updated? Oh, let's see there. Yeah.
Organization name probably needs to be changed to Duraspace. And, yeah. So we can assign me to that, I think, is probably
Okay, if you want to go.
I'll end up having to send it anyway.
If you want to go ahead and open that and do that, that's fine. The next one I've got there is FC Repo 697, which is the web admin client does not handle correctly PIDs that have Octet escaped characters. Basically, the web admin client is not URL encoding PIDs when it's making its calls, seems to be the problem. If you create a new object and put an escaped Octet character in there, it actually does create the object in the background, but comes back with an error message, and you can't actually search and then open that object. So I would say that's a bug. My thoughts are increase that priority to major as well, because it means basically the web admin client can't cope with the full range of Fedora PIDs.
Yeah.
It should be a pretty simple fix.
Yeah.
Which issue are you on again now?
697.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I should go ahead and open that, as it's definitely a bug that I can reproduce.
Yeah.
What are the thoughts on priority?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an embarrassing problem. So from that perspective, I'd say it's major. The impact is probably not... but anybody who's using, you know, encodings as or percent encodings as part of their repository, like the NSTL, would be affected by it. So,
yeah, from that point of view, I think it's minor. I think it's a candidate for the release. Maybe we leave it in as minor and see if anyone votes.
Yeah. Steve, I'm transitioning the issues, so just to be clear, everything that's in milestone one that is open is I'm going to remove from milestone one, right? Just put it in.
Yeah.
3-4 period. Okay.
Okay. So that's 697. That's opened in the release and left as minor then. One that Kai reported, FC Repo 696, adding a data stream with managed content throws exception when providing the checksum.
Yes, this is a tricky one.
I think Ben might be talking, but...
Oh, sorry.
Oh,
can't hear him. I can't hear you, Ben.
I think Kai was talking. We couldn't hear Kai.
Maybe it was Kai.
Oh, okay. So this is a tricky one, 696, because there is an exception that gets swallowed. And the real cause is that a context object is missing, and the PDP can't evaluate the rights for pulling the data stream. So effectively, it looks like as if the validation fails, but it really doesn't. Because it's really a null point exception.
Yeah. So is this a Fezzle bug then, or is this a native Fedora?
No, it's a Fedora bug, and I think it's been there forever because before. Right now, it's related to the content manager params that don't pass along the context. But once I've tried passing along the context, and once that's there, it still doesn't work because there is an empty. It's an empty context that is being used for the evaluation, and it doesn't have enough information for the PDP to decide on whether the authentication should fail or not.
Okay.
So it's when going through the REST API, well, it seems clear we don't have a test case for this, which we probably should. But it seems strange that if this was happening somewhere below the REST API, that it would not have worked at some point. I mean, that it in previous releases didn't work, because I would assume somebody at least manually checked this case out and verified that you could submit something with a checksum.
Yes, I was wondering that too, but as it was before release 3.3, it didn't work.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It has.
Okay.
I think it has crept in some time ago before the release.
Well, I guess. Yeah, we can probably agree that this needs to be fixed for 3.4.
yeah, I think so. Should I go ahead and open that? And
yeah, I'm kind of tempted to, even though this one's a little tricky, maybe to boost the priority to critical. Feels like, you know, one of the major reasons people use a repository is to be able to have some trust in the checksumming capabilities, and if they can't exploit that, then it seems like kind of a big deal.
Yeah, so as it stands now, it's not possible to provide a checksum.
So it's not data loss, because the thing never gets in there to begin with. But you know, I don't know. It seems like one of these things that would be nice to get fixed pretty quickly. And it looks like we've got at least two votes for it so far.
Yeah, I'm okay with that being critical, actually. Are there any other views on that? Okay, well, I'll go ahead and do that. And what have we got left here? 6.9.5. Expose and evaluate method in the API for Fezzle. This is pretty low priority at the moment. It's a specific requirement that came up with York. This is to provide a method where you can basically test whether an action is going to be permissible or not from a UI, for example, rather than, you know, going ahead and doing something and getting back an error. So, you know, it's helpful building UIs, you know, providing buttons for actions you can do, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think there might have been an equivalent with the old Zacmel stuff, or at least it was something that came up a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like a pretty common requirement.
I mean, until Fezzle is a bit more stabilized, it's not really going to hit people that much. But, I mean, I'd say we can go ahead and open that. I don't know whether we want to put it in this release or not, really.
Well, this is one of the ones that we were trying to get in for this round two, and last time I talked to Mark Leggett, you know, at this point, we've got a fourth institution ready to contribute. And so
okay.
We were hoping basically that actually by, I need to talk to Mark again, but I mean, basically we had thought by this time in May, we'd have basically enough, I mean, so that all these four institutions would have sort of officially committed resources. And if that was the case, then MediaShelf would be able to actually start the work for this round two, and this would be part of it. So I'll try to talk to, I just sent Mark an email about something else earlier today. I'll try and follow up with him and see if, where that's at, because if it is, then I think we can get this in for 3-4.
Okay. Shall I mark it down for 3-4 at the moment, leave it as minor, and then we can take it off?
Yeah, I think that sounds good.
It means we don't lose it, as it were. So.
Right.
Okay, well, that's done. Okay, and the next one I've got is FC Repo 693, which is a standardized request for XML output of all REST API methods. The parameter's not consistent.
I think, there's two things that might be throwing Stuart off on this one. One is the fact that that was the old way of doing it in APIA Lite.
Okay.
But as far as I know, the REST API does it consistently. It's format equals XML.
Oh, right, okay.
So either that was the case, like he was sort of seeing a difference between the old REST API and that, or he looked at the REST API documentation, which there's a note at the beginning of it on removal of the .xml shortcut.
Yeah.
And that note was written incorrectly.
Okay.
So I'm going to change that note really quickly right now. it was written as XML equals true rather than format equals XML. So please change it to the format equals XML.
So were we saying close won't fix because we believe that format XML is consistent across the new REST API?
Yeah, I mean, I can verify, but last time I looked at the code, it seemed pretty clear to me that there wouldn't, because it's done in a base class, I think base resource, getting that argument, it would be pretty weird if it happened differently for different methods.
I'd be tempted to close it and let Stuart go back if he can launch a specific example in that case.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do that. And I'll add a comment. So format equals XML is the standard way with the new REST API then, yeah?
Yep. Do you want me... Well, so you can move on to the next one. I could also add a comment because I've got the link up.
Yeah, that would be great, actually. Let me just cancel. Okay, the next one we got is FC Repo 692. Which is add atom category Fedora types PID to JMS Fedora API update in just message. So this looks like an inconsistency.
I don't even think I know what this is. What is this?
Yeah. No, I'm not clear what this is.
So it's message that's being instructed. So we have the Fedora types PID. Yeah, I don't know what this is.
What was that, Eddie? Sorry?
I'm just, I don't know what this is.
Okay. I'm just tempted to leave this, as it is for now, then, and come back to it at some other stage. It doesn't look like it's of particularly high priority. I'm kind of conscious of time now and kind of scanning down to see what else we might want to include. So the other ones we've got that have been opened recently. That have probably not been discussed before. Possibly FC Repo 690, Purge Data Stream in the REST API returns 204 instead of 404 for a non-existent data stream on a valid PID.
So you would expect a not found message to occur rather than a whatever 204 is?
Yeah, the created,
no content.
Yeah, no. And so Asger's comment is,
well, let's see. An error to remove a non-existing data stream. Well, on the surface, I mean, that sounds like an error, except there is an interpretation of the API where that isn't an error. And specifically, it's if we consider purge data stream to be idempotent, which it's not exactly. So if it were idempotent, I could see that argument.
But so the point being that also via the SOAP API, if you do this on a non-existent data stream, you don't get any error, right? So
is that the case?
Well, I don't know. That's how I'm interpreting what Asker's saying.
I saw what he was saying as, well, I'm not exactly sure. Because he said it's not as per the underlying API an error to remove the data stream. Okay, so that's what you're seeing. And yeah, when you delete a data stream, you do get a list of versions that got deleted. When you're moving a data stream that doesn't exist. Okay, so it's difficult to discover whether your delete was actually just a range that didn't exist, or the data stream itself didn't exist. Yeah.
So I'd still say that it is, I mean, I think the reporter is right in the end, though, that it's certainly not the behavior that you would expect. I mean, if a data stream doesn't exist and you do a delete, I would expect a 404. I definitely wouldn't expect a 200 message.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure the REST API is just, in this case, is just wrapping, right? So, I mean, if the SOAP call isn't returning an error, that's all it's passing on. It's just passing on. So.
So what is it saying is difficult when you make the underlying API call in the REST layer to actually differentiate?
Yeah, because I'm taking that to mean that in like default management, we are not passing back enough information. Approach data stream. Returning in any case, you return this deleted dates data array. So,
and there's no special exception, but any management method at the interface level there could throw a subclass of server exception, right? So if it threw no such data stream exception or whatever, that could be caught at the REST level and turned into a 404.
Right.
So, yeah, I agree with the kind of, it doesn't really meet what you would expect. I think Asker's pointing out that if we're talking about the REST API going against the underlying management interface as is, then it's impossible to distinguish. But if we've got, and I think we do, we've got the flexibility to change how the management impl works to throw an indicator of that, then I think we can do that.
Okay. So, should we open and put in the release as it's REST API, or just open? Well, I think it's a candidate for the release, actually.
Yeah.
It's low priority, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd still see it as minor myself, unless other people started piling on.
So, fix if there's time kind of thing. Okay. The next one in the list and I think this is probably the last one we'd want to go through now, is 687, create upload method in REST API. This is essentially recognizing that if we want to deprecate the existing Lite API, we don't currently have an upload method, so we can't really deprecate it without providing the equivalent.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, it, I guess from an end user perspective, all that really changes for them is which URL the upload endpoint is at, right?
Yeah, and we'd have to think what that URL should be from a RESTful point of view. Where are you uploading to? What's the resource identifier? And I'm not sure I want a discussion on that now. But I think it should be opened and put in, definitely put in the release. I'm inclined to suggest that it's major in that we can't deprecate the REST API.
Yeah, we can't deprecate API Lite until that's done.
Sorry, API, the Lite API. So, anyone object to me increasing the priority of that to major?
Sounds good.
And I think the rest on that list are stuff we've kind of covered before. In the interest of time, as we've been going for an hour and a quarter, we probably want to try and move on a bit. Okay, so where does that leave us in terms of voting and priorities? How are we doing for time anyway? Because, I mean, I can do some stuff offline. I could maybe get together with Chris if you've got some time to carry on.
Yeah, I could certainly carry on now. I don't know if everybody has to necessarily. I don't have any restriction at the moment, but I do have to get going by 1 o'clock. Or within the next 45 minutes or so.
Okay. I'm paid. Okay, to carry on for that length of time anyway. So.
So should we call the remainder of the call optional for anybody who doesn't want to sit through it?
Well, yeah. I mean, what I was going to do is the URL I just posted. That's a list of the Fedora 3.4 open issues. By order of voting, so first of all, it'd be just a case of task of looking at whether the priorities match the voting. I guess things that we've already put as priority major are major for a reason, so that only really leaves the ones that have been voted on that are minor and whether we want to increase the priority. And then it was a case of basically defining what goes into milestone 2, which again, that could be optional. But I mean, there's an overall thing in terms of how we're managing this release and whether the milestone approach is working. I mean, quite obviously, in terms of milestone 1, we hadn't completed anything like what we intended to put in. I'm quite happy to carry on with the process at the moment because it does introduce at least prioritization, which I think is a good thing.
I feel that way too. I mean, we haven't gone through the whole process yet. We might step back and adjust, after the release, but
yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like it feels like we do have a good sense of what needs to be worked on first. The real issue right now is, I don't think anybody has much time at all.
Yeah.
I
think that's the issue with trying to fit this into an iterative sort of
schedule.
I mean, you normally pick a 2-week period knowing that you've got a developer who's going to work for 2 weeks. We're just not in that situation. But the only downside would be is if the approach we're taking is somehow detracting from getting stuff fixed and in the release. So, I'd be keen to hear if anyone's got any concerns from that point of view, whether we are not doing things in the right order or consuming, too much time managing it. But I'm okay at the moment. but I'd be keen to hear any comments.
Well, I've got, I mean, one that came up for me, and I was just thinking about how we're doing the special topics meetings and the committer meetings. At least the last 2 weeks, we kind of did both. And it felt like, you know, there was a good reason to do both. But, you know, it feels like, you know, if you look at the availability schedule of how much time people really have to dedicate to this every week. Most people, you know, the best case is they have an entire day. And if, you know, if we end up spending a couple hours here and a couple hours there, that eats up half your time for the week. Just to talk about stuff. So I don't know. I started wondering if, I mean, there's a couple things to try to lighten up on the meeting time. And, you know, one is to do special topics meetings more rarely when we're trying to get into the development flow. And another one is to maybe have have our status calls actually move, having a formal call for the status to every couple weeks, but, you know, keep in touch via email a little less synchronously. So that, you know, that frees up, you know, 25% of people's time for that week.
Well, yes, I mean, some of the issues we've discussed, for example, could have just been kind of open to vote on the Google developers list, for example, possibly to get consensus. I don't know, but yeah.
Any other people have thoughts on this? Especially those who are pressed for time.
I mean, I think it's good having these weekly calls. Although I'll be the first to admit that, like, I mean, you know, I miss them somewhat. I mean, I don't know that I miss them regularly, but, you know, I definitely miss them if other stuff is going around, and I kind of trust that things will carry on. But it's so I guess as long as that sort of flexibility is, you know, expected or anticipated, then I'm certainly okay with doing this weekly. I feel like making them more irregular might actually end up ultimately like lessening participation overall, because it kind of takes it off people's radar. People kind of get off the flow of it, and
it's kind of a best use of time thing. I do wonder whether we could maybe streamline sometimes. I don't know, sometimes we can get caught up in an issue, but sometimes you need to get caught up in an issue because it really does need, you know, a full participation discussion. So
yeah.
So okay. I certainly think regular reprioritization and discussing stuff and looking at priorities and stuff, looking at votes is good. I think a regular review of the new issues is good. So. Okay. Well, looking at the list of issues by votes, the ones that stand out for me on that are, first of all, FC Repo 64, data stream size attribute not fully implemented, which we've got down as minor, but has actually received 5 votes.
Yeah, and that's actually one that I guess I didn't vote for it, but if I felt like I had to, I would. But it's kind of neat to see that everybody who voted for it, you know, it wasn't biased by us at all, so... I feel like based on the number of votes it's got, it should certainly be receiving more attention.
Okay, so how about if I up that to major?
Yeah.
Okay, that is done.
The next three have all got, they're all marked minus, starting at FC Repo 504. They got a couple of votes each. It's not exactly representative sample size of the community. So I guess it'll be interesting to see whether those are committer votes or...
Yeah, the deployed as war, I know, is something that affects... That has been kind of an itch for Asker for a while, and he voted on that too. I mean, it's something I think we'd all really like to have. I'm just... As like a whole process thing, I'm kind of wondering if you know, we're getting a significant amount of items moving into the major category. And I'm kind of wondering, it's almost like I want to see the ones that are really important out of the major ones. So
we could just kind of go with an arbitrary kind of three votes or more sort of limit for now. Yeah. And then based on what's defined as major, construct, you know, next iteration based on that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, review as we move forward. Because what, I mean, if we look at the summary view, is this going to give us priority order? Yeah, because I mean, if you actually look at the summary view, we have... quite a lot of major open items now, don't we?
Yeah. Well, everything we moved out of M1 was major.
Yeah.
And then we've got some more items that we've identified in the process here as being major. So it makes me think, like, as we start to define the bucket for M2, that we kind of need to be, you know, even more selective.
Yeah. Yep. Now we've got about 20 open or being worked on major issues there, which is, based on the last milestone, is rather ambitious. I mean, one way. Well, I mean, you could assess the priorities of those 20 items, or you could say these are all candidates and see which ones people are willing to grab. And say that, you know, they'll have time to fix that in the next 3 weeks.
So it's the three threshold about right for votes, or? I mean, I was looking at the other ones that got two votes. Certainly, they're not things that speak to me very much. I mean, I guess I'd like the war thing, but I feel like I've got plenty to do that would be more helpful for the time being.
Yeah. The configurable parameters for the internal HTTP client is probably useful. Someone out the underlying.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, which one? Which one was that?
This is 552.
Yeah, certainly the timeouts and max connections should be something that other people have control of, you know, outside of being hard-coded, essentially.
Actually, I wanted to do this one for the previous release along with the proxy configuration because it belongs into the same place, but ultimately I didn't have the time. But I don't think it's too much effort.
Which module would this go into, or would it go into, like in the FCFG? Because honestly, like, just sort that out. The rest of it is probably pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know which one makes
belongs. Yeah.
More sense.
I think it's the web. Whoever's the web client. So the web client is the place where it's configured. The configuration should probably go to the FCFG, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it was a question of is there a natural module that it makes sense in? But it's used all over the place. Certainly we don't have a web client module. We have an external content manager module that makes use of an instance of web client, I believe. And that might be the major user of web client, actually.
It's the only one. I've isolated the web client so that it only gets used by the external content manager.
Oh okay. Perfect. Then that's the natural module that it gets configured under. That makes sense.
So is it worthy of a priority increase?
Everyone's silent.
Well, we just admonished ourselves for.
Yes, I know what I wanted to say.
I think probably it isn't. It isn't that important, given what other issues there are. But I think it could be done fairly easily. So, since there are votes on it. It could be done within the next milestone. Right?
Yeah. I mean, anyone is, of course, free to pick up and fix open issues outside of this structure, ultimately. You know, if people have got their own needs and stuff is open, as are the community encouraged to come and fix stuff they want fixing. So
yeah.
I'd be inclined to leave it as it is. And probably the other two we've got down there as well, service deployment, we still cannot specify relative URI in HTTP address and investigate triple source support, which I've actually done some work on, but that's kind of on the back burner at the moment. So milestone two, like I say, if I just went ahead and stuck in all of the major and above priorities and included the ones that had already been worked upon, we'd have 20 issues, which is too many. So one approach could be to just produce a candidate list, get people to sign up for the ones they think they ought to do, and base milestone two based on that. The other alternative would be a more detailed look at these 20, for example, and review priorities and pick the ones we think are most important. What do people think?
Yeah, I mean, well, I guess just as a process thing, I might like to go through the list of the most important and see if I can pick out, like, you know, of all the ones that are major, which ones to me feel like they're more major. You know, and maybe just compare notes with other people.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to engage in that, and maybe if we both do that offline.
Yeah.
If we could get it done in the next day or so, that would be really good. And then if we've got enough candidate issues based on that, because, well, I mean, one thing I'm quite conscious of in the last milestone is I was quite behind in terms of kind of getting to work and defining what the milestone was. And so in terms of overall process, I don't want to, that's to get in the way of, you know, people picking up things they think they should work on.
So, Ben, still with us? No. Well, Eddie and Kai, Dan, just as a process thing, you think that makes sense? Just to have us each pick out our, you know, top few favorites and...
I think it is the responsibility of the committers to use their best judgment, obviously taking into account what the votes are, but you still wind up having to make your best judgment. And that's just got to be the way it goes.
Yeah. So... I mean, Chris, do you want to, well, we could both make a stab at that offline. We could maybe go for a top 10 kind of thing and then put it on the internal developers list to see if there's any comment on that. Or,
yeah.
Or we could just talk through all these 20 issues now, if you like. I think we're going to be a bit stuck for him.
I mean,
I'd probably just kind of dump these in Excel or something and just try and sequence them on my own based on looking at the votes and, you know, my gut feel is to importance. And
yeah. Well, maybe we could independently do that. I mean, if other committers want to do that, that's great. But we could also, as you suggest, maybe just to speed things along, come up with a shared top 10 and float them by and, if there's no big complaints, then go with it.
Yeah, management by objection.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that sounds good to me. I mean, I'll probably have a stab at that.
Okay.
Now, in fact.
Okay, and we can just trade emails. And then when we come up with that list, shoot it to the other developers, and then maybe, you know, if we don't have any anybody making threats or anything, then we can make it final by the end of the week, or
well,
even
sooner would be good. Actually, yeah. Because like I say, I don't want the process to get in the way of anyone thinking they should pick up issues and fix them.
Yeah.
You know, that's where, you know, this experimental process we're trying out. It might be detrimental. So.
Yeah. So, I, like, for my part, I'll probably do this as soon as we get off this call. So, maybe if you're planning
too,
on
actually,
doing the same, then maybe we try to get the list of 10 shaved down by tomorrow afternoon.
That would be brilliant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we could actually just throw them right in milestone 2 if we agree, and then adjust if we need to, but assume that's the working list.
Yes, no, I'll set up a milestone 2 page like milestone 1 in fact, and modify the existing milestone 1. It needs updating anyway, so that would be great. Okay. Well, that's... Yeah, the only other thing we do need to look at is testing... Because I suppose my conception was we could get testers and people to work on issues aside at the same time, which hasn't happened at all. So probably once we got milestone 2 decided, we put out an email highlighting testing that still needs done on milestone 1 and ask people to sign up for that at the same time as signing up for issues and testing on Milestone 2, and see if we can, if I can be a bit more coherent this time about that.
Yeah. So will we just use the reviewer field in Jira for signing up?
Yeah. Is there any restrictions on when you can become a reviewer? Does it need to be?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess I was just thinking, well, we could update a wiki page and add our name to it fairly easily, too. Either way, I was just thinking we have that field and maybe it makes sense.
It makes sense to me, especially as you might be able to pull a custom report straight into Confluence based on that. I did set up just a custom table for Milestone 1. I hadn't thought about the reviewer thing, so that would be, yeah.
Well, it's doable.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Okay. Okay, well, I don't think I've got anything else.
Okay, I don't either. Anybody?
Just ask a quick question about something slightly related. So the other week when we had that talk about the Fedora Java client, and we had Rick talking about the work he'd done, I kind of missed most of what was going on there, but what was the upshot of that? Was that, I mean, because I think I remember hearing like people had various implementation related issues with stuff, but I didn't know if in the end of it what the sort of decision was on that direction.
Yeah, I think at one point in the discussion we were kind of at a point where it felt like we might be able to base the REST API, the official Jira task, on the stuff that Rick had done, or using some inspiration of the code that he had written. And I think where we left it was Asger's in charge of that task for the time being, and he's going to so he's already sent Rick a couple things about things that could be tweaked just to get it working basically. I think it's still a little bit up in the air as to how significantly that gets used for the ultimate Fedora client, but it seemed like there was some agreement that that we need a Fedora client that actually uses Fedora idioms. So it's like, you know, classes for things like data stream or what have you. So, you know, on the low end, or on the at the low level, you know, it speaks REST, and it would be nice to be able to peek into that stuff. And that's kind of the stuff that Rick's done. But at a high level, also having classes for things would be good. So that's kind of where we left it.
Okay. All right, so I guess I should follow up maybe with Asker and Rick. I ended up basically over the weekend, I had work that needed something like a, you know, Java Fedora REST client, and I wasn't sure where that was going to go, and I just did one.
Yeah. Funny you should mention that. I kind of did something similar for another project last week.
Okay. Great. So it's like our configuration utilities. Now we'll have.
Yeah. As long as we don't all check them in the trunk at once.
Yeah.
But, okay. Well, it might be worth actually throwing it into Incubator, though, just to get other people looking at it if you've got some ideas you want to.
Yeah. And I put it up on a GitHub project. But
okay.
It's sort of nested in another one, and I was just thinking of whether or not it's worth splitting out. And so anyway, maybe I'll do that, and that way we can all have another sort of at least offline discussion of that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. That's all I wanted to know.
Cool. Okay.
Cool.
All right, Steve, I'll catch up with you via email.
Yep.
And everybody else, we'll talk with you next week.
Yep. Thank you very much, everyone.
Well,
thanks. See ya.
Okay. Bye.